MTN, the Montana Television Network, in partnership with Montana PBS. This is Campaign 2014, the Senate debate. Made possible thanks to support from the Greater Montana Foundation. The Greater Montana Foundation, founded by Montana broadcasting pioneer Ed Craney, supports communications on issues, trends, and values of importance to all Montanans.
Good evening and welcome to Montana PBS Debate Night, the race for the U.S. Senate. Well, in just a few minutes, we'll get you out to Billings for the one and only televised debate in this Senate race as Republican Congressman Steve Daines will face Democratic State Legislator Amanda Curtis. Libertarian candidate Roger Roots was not invited based on the polling criteria set up by the debate partners. We want to remind you that immediately following tonight's debate, we will have a fact-checking analysis special. Right afterwards, the University of Montana School of Journalism faculty and students will be researching the topics and responses from the candidates, and we'll have more detail later. Now, as for analysis, joining us this evening, we've welcomed in David Parker, MSU political science professor, Democrat Gary Stein, a former legislative candidate, and Bob Brown, Republican and former Secretary of State. All right, gentlemen, got a couple of minutes before we head out to the debate. What do you expect to see and hear tonight? David, let's start with you.
So a lot of people look for game changers. Unfortunately, it rarely happens in campaigns, so I doubt that this debate could be a game changer. The one thing I do expect is that Amanda Curtis, 16 points down, she's got everything to gain, little to lose, so I think she's going to come out fighting. Unfortunately for her, since we only have about 2 weeks left in the race, even if she does really well, it's going to be hard to capitalize on that moving forward.
I certainly agree with David in terms of what we're likely to see, but at the same time, I'm kind of interested to see if Amanda Curtis presents herself as a candidate that we're going to see in the future, down the road, or if she's just going to go for broke and this is the one-shot deal at it. I don't think there's really much for Daines to do here except continue to bob and weave the way he's been doing, excuse me, over the course of the campaign.
I think, given the polls, that if Amanda Curtis has a chance, she's going to have to score a key punch in the debate tonight. She's going to have to make Steve Daines make an important mistake. And these debates aren't about winning the debate in terms of debaters' points, they're about winning the election. So I'm sure that Daines will be careful, and I think it'll be Amanda Curtis's nature to make it a spirited debate. I think that's the kind of a person that she is. And so I think she'll be trying to force Daines to make a mistake, and Daines will be appearing senatorial.
All right, we've got plenty to watch and listen for as the debate unfolds over in Billings. We're going to take you out there live right now on the campus of MSU Billings. A reminder, we'll be back with post-debate analysis. Now let's join MTN News anchor Jay Cohn, tonight's moderator for our U.S. Senate.
From MTN, the Montana Television Network, in partnership with Montana PBS. This is Campaign 2014, the Senate debate. Made possible thanks to support from the Greater Montana Foundation. The Greater Montana Foundation, founded by Montana broadcasting pioneer Ed Craney, supports communications on issues, trends, and values of importance to all Montanans.
We welcome you tonight to Debate Night here on the Montana Television Network. We welcome you here to the campus of MSU Billings. Petro Theater is the venue tonight as we present the only televised debate of the Montana U.S. Senate campaign here in 2014. I'm Jay Cohn, your moderator for the evening. We'd like to welcome all of our live audience here at MSUB tonight, along with the people tuning in and the Montana Television Network stations all across Montana. We're also tonight going nationwide on C-SPAN 2, so a big welcome to our folks watching across the country tonight. People are also listening into this debate on statewide radio. We're on the radio, we're on Yellowstone Public Radio, along with statewide with our friends with the Northern News Network. We would like to acknowledge our four sponsors tonight before we begin. First, MSU Billings with this beautiful facility here, one of our primary sponsors, along with Yellowstone Public Radio. Our other partner is the Billings Gazette, and then the Montana Television Network, all four of these entities joining forces tonight to bring you this televised debate. And a special thank you to the Greater Montana Foundation for all of their support. Just a few housekeeping items to mention. Our format tonight, we have two candidates that'll be questioned by our panel of three journalists. No opening statements tonight. The first candidate will get 60 seconds to answer the question. The other candidate will have 30 seconds to rebut, and then both candidates will have another 30 seconds to rebut what was just said. So we hope to have a lively discussion along those lines. Again, we're asking our audience locally to hold their applause till the very end. We covered the folks about cell phones and not hissing or booing or applauding during the debate. It gives us more time to cover more questions. So, with little ado, let's meet the candidates. We'd all agree this Senate race in Montana has just about everything this year, except for one thing. It has not had a debate, a televised debate, and we're hoping we're here tonight to fill that void. First off, let's meet Democrat Amanda Curtis, a native of Billings. Amanda and her husband Kevin live in Butte. Amanda is a math teacher currently at Butte High School. She was elected to the Montana House of Representatives in 2012. She is a total product of the Montana University system. Amanda has a degree in biology from Montana Tech. She got her teaching certificate from UM Western and is currently working on her master's degree at the University of Montana. She and her husband, Kevin, as I mentioned, live in Butte. She is a high school teacher at Butte High. She's also taught at Butte Central and also at the Helena Middle School. Amanda, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much for having me.
Also with us tonight, we have Montana Congressman Steve Daines. Steve was raised in Bozeman, is also a product of the Montana University system. He graduated from Montana State University with a degree in chemical engineering. He also spent 13 years working for Procter & Gamble, worked in his family's construction business for a while, and in 2000 was selected as the vice president for Right Now Technologies out of Bozeman. He was elected to the U.S. House in the November 2012 election. He and his wife, Cindy, have four children. Steve, good to see you tonight. Thanks for being
Jay.
Here.
Appreciate it.
All right. Now, the tough job tonight is up to our three panelists, and let's introduce you. First, on the left-hand side of the dais tonight, we have Mike Dennison, longtime friend of mine. Mike is a familiar byline for most Montanans reading newspapers across the state. For the past 9 years, Mike has worked for the Lee Newspaper State Bureau, but he's actually been covering the State House and government issues for some 22 years with the AP and the Great Falls Tribune in the past. Big welcome to Mike Dennison. Good to see you tonight, Mike.
Thanks.
Thank you. Also, we have with us tonight the news director of Yellowstone Public Radio, Jackie Yamanaka. She's been covering state and national politics for 28 years. Her first administration she covered was Governor Ted Swindon back in the mid-80s. So, Jackie, good to see you tonight. And I know you have a whole bunch of good questions for our panel. And last but certainly not least, our state political reporter with the Montana Television Network, Sanjay Talwani, joining us tonight. Sanjay has also worked in the past for the Helena Independent Record and the Great Falls Tribune. And those are our panelists tonight. But thank you very much. All right, that'll be enough of the applause. I have the first question as the moderator. We did flip a coin before this started. And Amanda, you get the chance to answer the first question. And our question is this. ISIS has been identified across the country as one of the biggest threats facing the United States of America, perhaps the world. My question is, do you believe President Obama's response to the ISIS threat is adequate? And if so, and if not, perhaps when would you be willing to put ground troops on the ground to deal with that threat?
ISIS is a terrible group with absolutely no respect for human life. And America absolutely has a role to play in ending ISIS. But we cannot be the policemen of the world. We need to have a serious conversation about how much this is going to cost and where the money is going to come from.
Steve, same question. You believe that the president's response to the ISIS threat has been adequate? And would you at some point be willing to put boots on the ground?
My concern with the president's response is the lack of strategy. He needs to consult with Congress. We need to be on the same page here moving forward. But we need to have a long-term strategy. The ISIS threat is not going away in the near term. 9/11 was 13 years ago. This is a threat that's going to affect generations potentially. We need to address it with a long-term strategy. I do not support putting combat troops on the ground. However, we need to have a strategy with energy security starting number one. We need to be the leading producer of oil and natural resources in the world so the world looks to us for energy instead of looking to the Middle East. Number two, we need to secure our borders to ensure that we don't have ISIS forces coming through the southern border. Number three, we need to ensure that we have a coalition of Middle East allies that are supporting the United States in dealing with this serious threat.
Quick follow-up, Amanda, about putting boots on the ground. How would you, if this war moves forward, how should we pay for this war?
You know, I also do not agree with putting boots on the ground. And it's up to the folks in that region to step up to the plate and contain ISIS and help us in making them go away. And we've seen politicians try to kick the can down the road and having the conversation, making sure that we know exactly how much it's going to cost and who is going to pay for it, because that should be a shared cost among all of the folks who feel the threat from ISIS.
Steve, we've put two wars on the credit card already. How are we going to pay for this?
Well, the ISIS force today are receiving $2 million a day from oil and refined oil revenues. So we simply cannot afford not to stop this threat. If you remember 9/11, and I remember being in business during that quarter when the economy froze. So the cost to the economy by doing nothing and allowing this ISIS force to continue will be far greater than what it will take here to combat this force and ensure that we secure the homeland, not only for this generation, but for our children and our grandchildren.
All right, our first question from our panelists goes to Jackie Yamanaka. Jackie, your question.
I suppose I'm more formal. Congressman Daines. 1 year ago, Congress shut down the federal government. If Republicans control both the House and the Senate after the midterm elections, would you again support a shutdown if you get into a budget stalemate, either with the president or fellow Republicans?
Well, the government shutdown was a failure of Washington. Washington is broken. It takes two parties to negotiate a deal. And I can tell you, the president was unwilling to come to the table and engage the Congress, because Congress was standing up for a couple of things. One was to ensure that we prevented the harmful effects of Obamacare. We wanted to give individual Americans, Montanans, the same privileges that the president had given large business and unions. And so it takes two to sort that out. It was a failure. And during the government shutdown, I refused to take my salary. I donated it to the Big Sky Honor Flight. Because in the real world, in business, when you don't get results, you're held accountable for that. And that is why Congress needs to be held accountable for it. And I said it's a failure of the system, and I didn't believe it was even right to take a salary during that time.
Amanda, your response.
The government shutdown absolutely was a failure. And Congressman Daines has a very clear voting record. That's one of the reasons that I agreed to get into this nomination. He voted for that government shutdown that cost the state of Montana millions of dollars and hurt Montana's small businesses. And he's so out of touch with the way the rest of us live in this state that he can afford to go without his congressional pay when most Montana families cannot relate to that.
Congressman?
Well, I can tell you what. We worked very hard during that period of time to ensure that we protected Montanans from the harmful effects of that shutdown. That was a failure of Washington, D.C. And I can tell you, on October 16th, I broke from the Republican majorities to vote to stop the shutdown and move forward here with governing again. And so it's a failure of government, and that's why it's important it never happens again. And I can tell you something else. We just had that stalemate again on the 30th of September, and we moved through it. We had reasonable, rational minds come together, and we passed through a continuing resolution on September 30th and avoided another shutdown.
I would just remind everyone that the shutdown actually did affect Montanans. It affected all seven of our reservations because there had not been any plans in place for those sovereign governments and what was going to happen to them during that government shutdown.
Jackie, follow up?
Yes, I do want to follow up because many Republicans signed the No New Taxes pledge. I'm just asking you, would you vote for a federal shutdown again?
Well, we don't need to have a shutdown. We need to have is both sides coming to the table and coming to agreement. This was the first president in our history who was not willing to sit down with Congress and negotiate an increase to the debt ceiling. President Obama had done it before in 2011. President Clinton had done it. President Reagan had done it. President Bush had done it. This was a president unique in history that refused to sit down with Congress and negotiate a deal. That is the way you work moving forward in politics. You need to have two parties that are willing to sit down, come together, find a solution, and move forward.
Amanda, one final
What I word? Didn't hear in that answer was no, I would not vote for a government shutdown. No, I would not vote for a government shutdown because it costs our state millions of dollars and hurts Montana businesses, hurts our Native American reservations, and The comments about compromise and working together are exactly right, and that's why it's important to not send the most extreme congressman Montana has ever had in its history back to D.C. as our senator.
Next question goes to Mike Dennison. Mike.
Good evening, Representative Curtis. You've said you support the Affordable Care Act, and it's helped a lot of people get health insurance. What about the vast majority of people who already had insurance or didn't get any subsidies to buy it? They're paying for it, but see few discernible benefits. Why should they support it?
I was just at the Bobcat tailgate the other day, and I ran into a physician who's been practicing medicine for 30 years. And he said, "It's really nice to meet you. Don't repeal the ACA." He said that he had a pre-existing condition that made him, as a healthcare provider, uninsurable. And, you know, I know that the ACA is not perfect. I've traveled over 8,000 miles across the state listening to Montanans who are experiencing problems with delay of care and the cost of their insurance. So I am just saying that I am willing to work with both sides of the aisle to fix these issues and make this bill work better for everyone. I actually have had the experience of having my health care plan rise in cost, and so I'm feeling that myself.
Steve, your rebuttal.
I will stand with the people of Montana. I'm not going to stand with President Obama. As I've traveled around the state, I've been to every one of Montana's 56 counties. Montanans overall don't like Obamacare. They want it repealed. And so we do not want to see a Washington, D.C.-led solution. D.C.-led solutions don't solve the problems. They create more problems. Over 30,000 Montanans lost their health insurance. Remember what President Obama said? If you like your health care insurance, you can keep it. Well, tell that to the tens of thousands of Montanans, the 9,000 Medicare Advantage seniors that are losing their coverage. And they just got the letters here in the last 2 weeks.
Mike, do you have a follow-up?
No.
Amanda?
I am so thankful that President Obama is not on the ballot in the state of Montana. The people that are on the ballot are myself, who truly is one of us and understands these issues of rising healthcare costs, and the most extreme congressman we have ever had, who has, instead of working to find a solution, thrown a tantrum and voted over 40 times to repeal something that is absolutely saving lives for working families in Montana.
Sanjay, you're next up.
Congressman Daines, again on Obamacare, you've said you want to repeal the Affordable Care Act, and you've said you're interested in replacing it with things like tort reform, health savings account, portability of health plans across state lines. But for people who can't afford health insurance now and haven't been able to, do you think those things will really help them get health insurance? And do you think we even should have a policy in this country as a goal to get towards some kind of universal health coverage for people who can't afford it and can't?
I believe the answer to the health care problems is to have a Montana-based solution. And by the way, I did not vote against Obamacare 40 times. I should check my record. I voted against it once to repeal Obamacare. That's my voting record. But here's what we need to do. Tort reform is probably a 10 to 20% savings in defensive medicine costs. We also need to expand HSAs. Obamacare cut HSAs. We need to expand HSAs. And number three, we need to allow American people to have a tax deduction who aren't working for a company to receive that same tax deduction that individuals receive when they work for a company and have employer-sponsored healthcare plans. At the end of the day, I don't want to have a one-size-fits-all solution that might work for California or New York. We need a solution that works for Montana, that works for rural Montana, for those Montanans that are living month to month on fixed incomes, those hard-working middle-class Montanans that don't want to see an Obama-centered solution from D.C. They want to see a solution made right here in Montana.
Amanda.
We have, unfortunately, seen one-size-fits-all solutions from Congressman Daines. He has voted along Tea Party lines almost 90% of the time, and that vote to repeal the ACA was one of those. The fact of the matter is that the ACA provided for our state to expand Medicaid, which would have provided health insurance to the most vulnerable of our citizens. Our legislature dropped the ball on that, and I would like to see us continue to improve the ACA, and in Montana's next legislature, expand Medicaid for all of our citizens.
Steve.
The Congressional Budget Office just released an update. The problem that the ACA was trying to solve was ensuring that the poor, the disabled, those who can't afford health care are getting coverage. The Congressional Budget Office's own forecast for 2020 says 31 million Americans will still not have health care coverage after the ACA is implemented. Nancy Pelosi sold the health care system, the ACA, as a $950 billion project. The latest estimates suggest it will be now $1.8 trillion spent, and we'll still have 31 million Americans uninsured. This is after the ACA is implemented.
As a math teacher, I really have to just step in here and say that when you look at the cost savings of preventing citizens from having their initial point of contact with the healthcare system be the emergency room, the amount of money that is saved by this country in the long run is astronomical. That's a much more realistic way to look at the numbers.
And the updated CBO score that came out of the Senate committee just updated last week says the ACA now will add $130 billion to our debt. So $1.8 trillion of expense, raise taxes, 31 million Americans uninsured, and it's going to raise the deficit $131 billion. Take a look at that Senate committee report that just reviewed the latest Congressional Budget Office forecast.
Sanjay, do you have a follow-up?
For Congressman Daines, about those 31 million people you mentioned who will still be unable to afford health insurance, if they can't afford health insurance, can they afford health savings accounts? Are they going to benefit from tax deductions or at all?
So here's what we need to do. We need to move this, we need to solve this problem at the state level. We have states like Indiana, states like Utah, other states are moving forward right now with programs and plans here that will be unique to that state, unique to that state's needs. You think about Montana. What a resident in Winnet might need or Ekalaka might need could be very different than somebody living in Bozeman, Billings, or Missoula. And so we need to come up with a state-focused solution. A great big bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. is not the answer. Look at what the VA has done when it took over that health care system, how veterans now are not getting their care. Look at Indian Health Services. When the federal government takes over a system, it becomes very expensive, and the biggest problem is the poor, the disabled, the elderly are not going to get the care that they need.
Amanda, your follow-up to that.
You know, I would just ask anyone who has voted to repeal the ACA to try to explain that to my mom, who has not had health insurance for 31 years, but now has access to preventive care and help paying for her prescriptions. Or try to explain that to my new friend that I met the other day, who as a healthcare professional, for the first time, is considered insurable.
All right, moving along. Jackie, it's your turn.
Representative Curtis. Because the need for roads, police, sewer and water systems in Bakken-affected communities is immediate and immense, would you support the return of earmarks, in other words, congressional orders on how to spend money to pay for these projects?
In talking about Eastern Montana, I think it's really important for us to remember that our state has given out-of-state corporations who are making millions of dollars off of our natural resources an 18-month tax holiday. And when you look at paying for roads and bridges and schools and police officers, perhaps we should be taxing in the first 18 months instead of letting an out-of-state company come in and reap as many natural resources as it can and then move on to the next well before it ever has to pay any taxes.
Congressman Daines.
Well, I'll answer the question. No, I don't support earmarks. And the reason I don't support earmarks is because it was abused. You saw what happened in Washington, D.C. You know, I didn't have a career in politics. I had a career in business prior to having the privilege of serving the United States House of Representatives. But the problem with earmarks is that you have members of Congress who are using that to cut deals, to get special privileges and so forth at the expense of the taxpayer. They're using it to pad their own success at the expense of the American people. So here's how we move forward. I serve on the Transportation Infrastructure Committee in the House. And we can work through prioritizing our projects here, working with the administration here. We can do that without having earmarks.
Amanda, you have a rebuttal?
I am also against earmarks, and we should not send our congressman back to D.C. to be in the Senate who has supported incentivizing corporations to ship jobs overseas and corporate tax loopholes. Talk about having a special deal.
Steve, the most important thing we need to do right now is grow this economy. As I chat with citizens across Montana, they want to see better-paying jobs, more good, high-paying jobs. They want to see less government. Nearly 50% of the graduates today from university systems are either unemployed or underemployed. That is one of the biggest challenges we face, and why, when you talk with Montanans, what they say, they don't want to have to travel out of state to visit their grandkids. They want to be able to see opportunities for their children, that they can stay in Montana, we educate our children here, we raise them here, and then we export them because there aren't enough good high-paying jobs here in Montana.
Next question for Mike Dennison.
Good evening, Congressman Daines. You say abortion should be made illegal in most cases, and I believe you also oppose government funding for Planned Parenthood's Montana clinics that provide some health care services for low-income men and women. Why are these goals good for Montana? Why are they the right thing to do?
Well, first of all, it's important that we provide contraception for women, make it easily accessible. At the same time, it's very important that we have a respect for life. We're a nation that has a great respect for life. You think about if a soldier is left on the battlefield, we will risk the lives of 20 Navy SEALs to go in to rescue but one life. Think about our Declaration of Independence that says these are certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is so important that we stand for life. We stand for those who are disabled, those who are elderly, and the unborn. They're the most vulnerable. They have no voice in our society. And that is why I will stand for life for those who are most vulnerable in our society.
Amanda.
The truth is that Congressman Daines sponsored a bill that experts agree would ban most common forms of contraceptives. And, you know, when I was 16 years old and I had my first car and my first job, I also used Planned Parenthood to access health care. I was a very independent young woman and have been making those decisions for myself for a lot of years now. And I don't know if you've noticed, but there's only one woman standing on the stage tonight, only one woman candidate for the Senate. And women can absolutely trust me to trust them.
Congressman Daines.
Well, I'm a father of four children. We have two sons and two daughters. It's very important to me as a father of two daughters to ensure that someday my daughters will have access to contraception when they need it. I think it's very, very important that we stand to ensure that the women across this country have full access to contraception. We also need to make sure that we stand up and respect the First Amendment, which is that there's an issue of freedom of religion there as well. That's quite so important, though, that we stand for women and ensure they have access to contraception.
So I would just step in here and say that what Congressman Daines has just said in mentioning the First Amendment is he's reminding all of us that he supports the Hobby Lobby decision that says a corporation can make my health care decisions for me. And as a woman senator, I absolutely disagree with that.
Mike Dennison, you have a follow-up?
No, I don't.
Next question to Sanjay.
Representative Curtis, you said you support the good jobs in Montana that come from our coal industry, and you also support the development of the Keystone XL pipeline. On the other hand, many of your supporters also have serious concerns about climate change and global warming, which they say is caused by fossil fuel burning. Aren't you having it both ways, talking up these jobs from the fossil fuel industry and also saying to the environmental community, yes, I'm very concerned about global warming?
Wow, Sanjay, you've asked a lot of questions in just one. Coal is an important part of our economy and our energy system, and I absolutely support the good jobs that it produces. And As far as the climate change part of that, I have stepped up to the plate here and said that I am willing to work with both sides of the aisle. I am willing to work with anyone who is willing to have the conversation about how we support all sectors of the economy, not just the largest corporations and the wealthiest individuals. Part of that is creating a long-term plan for shifting to greener technologies, renewables like wind and solar.
Congressman Daines.
So I support building the Keystone Pipeline. It took the Canadian government 7 months to approve the Keystone Pipeline. It's taken this president now 6 years. This president needs to stand with the people of Montana. I will go back to Washington and stand with the people of Montana who want the Keystone Pipeline built. We passed a bill in the House that approved the Keystone Pipeline. The United States Senate refused to take it up for a vote. On the issue of coal, it's 5,000 jobs, $125 million of revenue every year that supports our schools, our teachers, our infrastructure, as well as low-cost electricity. 51% of Montana's electricity comes from coal. This president and the EPA are declaring war on coal. I talked to Darren Olcott of the Crow Tribe. He told me that a war on coal is a war on the Crow people of Montana, and that is what this president is waging right now on the natural resource industry here in Montana.
Amanda.
Congressman Daines spent much of his time in the private sector building up jobs in China. He spent much of his time in Congress incentivizing corporations who ship their profits and our jobs to China. And so it's no surprise that he would fight so hard to ship our oil and our refining jobs to China. And we should be demanding the high-paying permanent jobs that would come from building the infrastructure to refine it here.
Steve. Can I answer to that? Yeah. I'm a bit confused on my opponent's position. She came out against the Keystone Pipeline originally. Now she says she supports it if the product's refined here. There is a law that's 39 years old that prohibits the export of crude. All the Keystone oil is going to get refined here in the United States. That law was signed by President Gerry Ford on December 22, 1975. And so I'm not sure why she puts a condition on the Keystone Pipeline. It will all be refined here. It has to be because of the law. We can't export crude.
If I could defend myself here, sure. You know, my dad's a laborer, and laborers are one of the unions that depend on temporary jobs like the Keystone to feed, clothe, and insure their kids. I understand more than anyone how important those temporary jobs are to our state.
And with that, we're moving towards the half-hour mark of our one-hour debate. You're watching the U.S. Senate debate tonight on the Montana Television Network. We'll be back in 1 minute.
Welcome back to Campaign 2014, the Senate debate on MTN and Montana PBS.
And we welcome you back to MSU Billings Petro Hall for tonight's U.S. Senate debate between Democrat Amanda Curtis and Republican Steve Daines. We are live here on the Montana Television Network, along with Yellowstone Public Radio and the Montana News Network, along with C-SPAN 2 across the nation. First question of the second half of the debate, I'm going to ask you a little bit about your ads. Amanda, we finally have seen one of your ads on TV. You say, we need one of us in the Senate. I've talked to people that think we need somebody a lot smarter than us in the Senate. Are you in suggesting perhaps we need to dumb down the Senate? Or maybe you have some splaining to do.
That's such an interesting perspective. Thank you for that. You know, when our founding fathers wrote our founding documents, they did not ever intend for corporations to be running the show here. They absolutely intended for teachers and electricians and plumbers to be making the decisions that affect us in our citizen legislature. And I have found in meeting Montanans that they're a little bit afraid of being part of the process, that maybe they don't think they're quite smart enough to do it or don't have the right background. And the reason that I have stepped up to the plate is to prove that you do not have to be a silver spoon-fed politician, a career politician to represent working families, and that the best person to represent workers in this state is one of us.
I'll follow up to that just with Amanda. I think we're getting to your experience. Do you think you have the experience to represent the state in the U.S. Senate with 1 year in the House of Representatives and your background as a high school teacher?
Absolutely. I'm sure by now most folks have read in their local paper about my background growing up in poverty right here in Billings and the adversity that I experienced. Most people know that I have dedicated my life to education because it's the pathway to overcoming the adversity that I've experienced. The experiences that I've had in a working class family in the state of Montana absolutely make me the best person to be our voice in the United States Senate.
Congressman Daines.
Well, Representative Curtis and I do agree that we need to have more of a citizen-type legislature serving us back in Washington. We need more men and women who have real-world experience that can bring that back, taking the skills learned in the private sector outside of Washington to help lead the country. You know, growing up in Bozeman, in fact, Mom and Dad grew up here in Billings. My dad's a Billings senior bronc. My grandma still lived in the same 1,100-square-foot home on Avenue C for 45 years until she passed away just a few months ago. But I can tell you what, I grew up watching a mom and dad start up a construction business from nothing. We lived in 10 different houses growing up in Bozeman, moving about every year and a half to stay a step ahead of the bank. I worked my summers in construction to put myself through college at Montana State University in engineering. But I think we need people who have had experience growing jobs, growing businesses, because we talk about jobs. I'm the only candidate on this stage who has actually been out there and created hundreds of good high-paying jobs right here in Montana.
Quick rebuttal, Amanda.
I just have to apologize to all of the teachers out there for what you've just heard, because we know that teachers are also very important job creators in our state and in our country.
Steve, I have a question about some of your ads. One of your ads touts the Balanced Budget Accountability Act. The fact is, ever since that act was introduced, it's just sat in committee. It's given a 5% chance of passing, but the ad makes it sound like everything's cool, we balance the budget, and that Congress won't get paid as long as the budget isn't balanced. But last time I checked, Congress was still getting paid and the budget's not balanced.
And there's the problem, Jay, in Washington. When I talk about that idea with Montanans, they love the idea. Let's not pay Congress until they get the budget balanced. You go back to Washington, D.C., that's how broken it is. Members of Congress don't want to get on board with that idea because it holds them accountable. But I think we have to reform the entire system back there. We need an amendment to the Constitution that requires a balanced budget. In Montana, we balance our budget. We do it every legislative session. Why is that? Because there's a requirement to balance the budget. They can't leave Helena without it. 49 states have that requirement, but Washington, D.C. does not. And so that is the battle we face in that culture in Washington. These career politicians have been there far too long, and that is why we need to change the culture in the House, we need to change the culture in the Senate by electing more men and women who bring experiences outside of government and bring them to government to lead.
Isn't that bill just a symbolic bill? There's really no teeth in it, and in fact, Congress will still get paid even if that passes because it only reduces a portion of their annual salary. So the ad is false in that respect.
No, it doesn't. We've done all the legislative research on that so that it would impact the current Congress and the future Congress. Believe me, there's plenty of skin in the game, and that is why we've got resistance right now from members of Congress. We've had discussions. They say, well, that might mean I don't get paid. That's exactly the reason I've introduced that bill, is because if Congress refuses to balance the budget, they're not going to get paid. We need to hold Congress to a much higher standard. We need to hit members of Congress in their pocketbooks because they're hitting us in our pocketbooks.
Amanda, quick rebuttal.
I don't know if any of you are familiar with the average earnings in Congress, but I can guarantee you that not a single one of those people is worried about losing their salary. And, you know, if all of Congressman Daines' ads were telling the truth, then I wouldn't actually have to be standing in front of you right now.
Jackie Yamanaka, next question.
Congressman Daines, your party has talked about Medicare reform. And so this evening I'm asking you for specific solutions that you would support to keep this health care program for senior citizens fiscally solvent.
So we need to engage in an adult discussion around how we preserve Medicare for the generations going forward. As I've thought, reflected, looked at what's going on in Washington, here's the problem. As soon as somebody suggests a reform to save Medicare for future generations, immediately 30-second ads pop up, and whoever suggests that idea will be vilified in the political process we have today in the United States. We have to start with two operating principles. Number one, we are not going to touch the benefits of existing seniors today or those approaching retirement. But number two, we are going to have to move forward with some reforms, or our children and our grandchildren will not receive this important safety net. It'll be gone in their generation. The Medicare trustees project that Medicare runs out in about 2033. So we don't have a lot of time, but it's going to require truly a bipartisan agreement between Republicans and Democrats sitting down and agreeing that we're going to get this done. There was attempts at that with Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowles that started to shoot straight with the American people. The problem, it got caught in the politics of Washington, and it died.
Amanda, your rebuttal.
I will absolutely support the Medicare Protection Act that protects the eligibility age. And one way that we can help keep Medicare solvent is by cutting down on improper payments. We need to support programs that will keep Montanans in their homes and in their communities. And once again, I will point to Congressman Daines' voting record. Congressman Daines did vote to turn Medicare into a voucher system. A voucher system that would cost Montana seniors up to 50% more in their premiums.
Congressman Daines.
First of all, it's an inaccurate statement. I've never voted for a voucher system. But let me say this as it relates to Medicare. I just introduced a bill about 6 weeks ago that looks at, here's one of the problems in Washington. The Affordable Care Act right now is going to impose a hardship on those businesses that provide in-home health care for Medicare patients. My grandmother had that here in Billings. When she was in her early 90s, she preferred to stay in her little home on Avenue C and have somebody come to her home and care for her instead of being in an institution or some kind of assisted living complex. It was better for her and it was more cost effective for the taxpayer. And the Affordable Care Act is placing a burden now. It goes into effect in January 1, and the bill that I have introduced asks for a 2-year reprieve on that so we can keep this in-home health care system, which Medicare patients like. And it saves taxpayer dollars. But here's one of these other unfortunate consequences of the Affordable Care Act.
Amanda.
I would just like to remind everyone that Congressman Daines has a very clear voting record that cannot be ignored. He has a 10% rating with different senior organizations. And I will support the Older Americans Act that provides services like Meals on Wheels and the Montana Aging Services that keep seniors in their homes and in their communities.
Next question to Mike Dennison. Mike.
Representative Curtis, you've received an F rating from the National Rifle Association, which I believe is supporting Congressman Daines. If I'm a gun owner and I care about gun rights, why should I vote for you?
I am a staunch supporter of our Second Amendment rights. My husband and I, just in the week before the nominating convention, were out shooting the Browning 12-gauge light that his grandfather, who recently passed away, left to us. This is just another example of the other side not being able to talk about the issues that we've outlined so far in this debate. So they turn to making me look like something that I'm not.
Congressman Daines.
I've been a lifelong member of the NRA, and I grew up accessing our public lands, hunting and fishing our public lands here in Montana, enjoying shooting sports. I remember I killed my first antelope with my grandfather and have great memories growing up here in Montana enjoying shooting sports. But let's remember something. The Second Amendment, as important as it is for hunting and those privileges, is not about hunting. It is about freedom. It is about liberty. I received an A-plus rating from the NRA. It's the highest score ever given to a statewide candidate in Montana. My opponent received an F rating from the NRA. It is the lowest score ever given to a statewide candidate in the history of Montana. I think it illustrates her extreme positions on this most important issue to most Montanans.
Amanda.
You know, unfortunately, the NRA, that started out as a wonderful educational group about gun safety and gun ownership, has become another lobbying group for corporate special interests. And Montanans should be much more worried about accessing their public lands. And as long as we're talking about accessing our public lands so that we can use our firearms. And as long as we're talking about voting records, let me just point out that Congressman Daines has the lowest rating on conservation of any congressman to ever represent the state. It's a 4%.
Next question to Sanjay. Do you have a question on public lands, I believe?
For Congressman Daines, you've called for a Montana-made solution to the question of how we manage our national forests and restore our ailing timber industry. As you know, Senator Tester has pushed a bill that mandates logging levels in three national forests, and you've opposed it. Why not go with a compromise that could pass, could get timber flowing to the mills fairly soon, and then work forward from that to try and expand it to around the country and other national forests, as you said you'd like to do?
Right. When I was growing up, we had 30 active sawmills in Montana. Today, we have only 11. Timber harvest on federal lands is down over 80% from where it was back in the late 80s and early 90s, and it's not because the housing industry has gone soft. Our current utilizations of our timber products industry in Montana is around 65%. It would be at 100% except for one reason: logs. They can't get enough timber. And so what John put together there with his bill was a good start, but it affected just three national forests, and it hasn't gotten to the Senate floor yet. We passed a bill in the House that will restore healthy forests and healthy communities. It affects all 10 national forests in Montana. It will create thousands of timber jobs and will be there in perpetuity. The bill that John had sunsets in 15 years, so it's a good start. But we've got a bill that actually passed the House with bipartisan support. And so we've got a bill that's moving forward right now. We have a chance to actually pass a bill that deals with comprehensive timber reform and to bring back the timber industry, what was such a vital part. Remember the Libby loggers? Well, you go up to Lincoln County today, I had dinner one night with a couple up in Eureka, and they said, you know how I describe Lincoln County? Poverty with a view. We need to change that, and that's why the bill we passed would affect all 10 national forests, including those up in Lincoln County.
Amanda, your response.
You know, when I was in the Montana legislature, I saw literally hundreds of Montanans show up and stay late into the night waiting to testify in favor of the Forest Jobs and Recreation Act. That's a bill that is written by Montanans, for Montanans, and represents a true compromise between conservation groups and the timber industry. And, you know, I've heard Congressman Daines say less government, but he completely forsook the Montana-made solution in favor of a D.C. mandate to clear-cut our forests. He also sponsored a land-grab bill that would sell our public lands out to out-of-state developers.
Congressman Daines.
That last statement's absolutely false. What we pushed forward was the same thing the White House is asking for, and that is to study all the federal assets. For example, there's a building in Washington, D.C., a federal building worth over $100 million that's been vacant for 12 years. It might make sense to sell that building, but we will not allow the sales of public lands here in Montana. Those are public lands that belong to the people of Montana, and I will stand and fight for that. In fact, I introduced a bill that said making public lands public. There's 2 million acres of Montana public lands that are inaccessible, and the bill that I co-sponsored says we need to provide a way here so that we can get to those 2 million acres so Montanans have better access to their public lands.
Quick follow-up, Amanda.
Sure. You know, the bill that he just spoke about was some political grandstanding, and I know that because Congressman Daines went right back, turned around, and voted against funding our access to our public lands. And when he talks about more jobs, how many more jobs, timber jobs, would we have in the state after they're done clear-cutting our national forests? It's not a sustainable solution for timber management.
Next question goes to Jackie Yamanaka.
Representative Curtis, immigration has raised some serious concerns about our national security, our economy, and now our public health. What do you think should be done to give America greater control over who enters this country, while also satisfying the need of the workforce for labor?
I have a biology degree, and I've spent hours working in biological labs, and I absolutely trust the best doctors in the world, those who are working for the Center for Disease Control and the National Institute of Health. And it's important to fund the agencies that are responsible for protecting our country from biological threats. Congressman Daines voted for a shutdown that cost those agencies millions of dollars and made it harder for those specialists to do their jobs. He also voted against ending the sequestration that would have restored funding to the CDC and the National Institute of Health.
Congressman Daines.
Your question was on border security and the need to ensure we secure our borders and immigration. Number one, we need to secure our borders. I was on the House floor in debate here a couple of months ago. Representative Poe from Texas was down the southern border along the Rio Grande talking to those brave men and women who are in the U.S. Border Patrol. He said from January 1st up until around early July, the Border Patrol had apprehended individuals from 144 different countries, including three Ukrainians the prior week. There's 196 countries in the world. So border security needs to be our first part of. We must secure the borders for the threats of ISIS and other terror groups, for the threats of Ebola, and long-term for the national security of this nation.
Amanda, question on border security.
Absolutely. I'll support responsible immigration reform. Both sides of the aisle have worked together on this issue and put forth bills that will increase the number of worker visas at all levels so that from unskilled laborers all the way up to labor to workers who hold master's degrees in STEM areas will be able to stay and work in our country and have a reasonable pathway to citizenship. That's the kind of working together that I'll represent as your next United States Senator.
Mike Dennison.
Congressman Daines, you've been talking a lot this campaign about jumpstarting the economy and creating more jobs in Montana. And most of the things you've talked about have been clearing the decks for business, making it easier through less regulation and lower taxes. How is this not just warmed over trickle-down economics? And if I'm mischaracterizing that, please say so, but what can you show me that has actually worked to help the middle class in this country?
Well, we need to keep fighting for the middle class, and tell you how we do that. A couple things. One is moving forward as aggressively as possible with an energy security strategy. One of the greatest challenges for the middle class is, one, is getting a good high-paying job, but two, is high energy prices. We need to approve the Keystone Pipeline and move forward on building that. I was out at the Norval Co-op, electric co-op in Glasgow a while back. They told me that if the Keystone Pipeline is approved, those few thousand Montana co-op customers will see no increase in their electric rates for the next 10 years. If the Keystone Pipeline's not approved, their rates will see an increase of about 40%. Why is that? Because the Norval Co-op is supplying electricity to one of the pump stations on the Keystone Pipeline. That is how you help the middle class. That is how you help those Montanans up by Fort Peck who are living month to month on Social Security checks, who are living month to month, barely making it. And we do that by creating jobs. We do that by ensuring we keep energy prices low. Why are gas prices dropping right now in this country, which is a big help to the middle class? It's because the Saudis now see the fact the U.S. is going to be the leading oil producer in the world next year. We will surpass Russia and Saudi Arabia in oil production next year. And that is not because of Barack Obama. That is in spite of Barack Obama.
Amanda Curtis. Please. About 5 minutes left.
You know, middle class Montana, ask yourself, are you better off in the last 2 years that we've had Congressman Daines? We've sent more of the same to DC to vote for millionaires and billionaires and corporate special interests, and now you've just heard it for yourself. The truth is, I have rolled out a jobs plan that emphasizes small businesses as the backbone of our economy in the state and emphasizes agriculture, which is hampered at every part of the process by corporate ag. I will work with both sides of the aisle to come up with solutions that work for all sectors of the economy, not just the biggest corporations and the wealthiest individuals.
Congressman Daines, rebuttal, please.
You know, you take a trip out to Colstrip and you talk to those hundreds of individuals out there who depend on coal for their way of life. You go to the Crow Indian Reservation where they have a 50% unemployment rate. Without the development of coal resources on the Crow Reservation, their unemployment rate would be 80 to 90%. How do you help the middle class? How do you help middle class Montana's hardworking taxpayers? You help them by ensuring they have a job. That's why the National Education Association supports the timber bill that we're moving forward in the House right now. That is why county commissioners across Montana support that timber bill, because we get good, high-paying jobs in our natural resource industries here in Montana. Timber, oil, natural gas, coal, hydro, and all of the above, frankly, but we need to make sure we continue to support and expand our coal production here in Montana.
Amanda, quick rebuttal.
I'll support the Indian coal tax credit. I completely understand how important energy is to our economy. I've actually spoken with the workers in the Yellowstone County refineries who are very concerned that their refining jobs are going to be shipped down that pipeline.
We just have a couple minutes to go. I'm going to take the last question. We're here on the campus of MSU Billings today. They just had a poll out that showed in this race, 20 to 25% of the people have not yet made up their mind. So give us your pitch, Amanda, for these people sitting on the fence, how they might determine who wins this.
You know, Medicare and Social Security need to be preserved. And who's going to do that in the Senate? One of us, someone who understands that those programs are programs that workers in Montana have paid into for decades and should be able to retire without worrying where their groceries or their health care are going to come from. Our access to our public lands absolutely needs to be preserved. And who's going to do that? One of us. Someone who understands that Montanans are not able to take a vacation in this state without access to our public lands. Not the most extreme congressman that our state has ever had, who has voted to turn Medicare into a voucher system and has voted to sell off our public lands. And certainly not the congressman who has received the most amount of money possible from Citizens United, who thinks that corporations are people and money is speech. Montanans disagree with that.
Quick rebuttal, Steve.
Well, Montanans want to see somebody who has the experience, growing jobs, has grown up as a sportsman, who has an A-plus rating from the NRA, unlike my opponent, has an A-plus rating from the F, or excuse me, an F rating from the NRA. That is a significant difference. I'll tell you, a lot of Montanans vote their guns, and that's an important issue for Montanans out there, and it also shows the extreme positions that my opponent has taken, particularly as it relates to the Second Amendment. But I stand for more jobs. I stand for less government. We need somebody who will stand up for Montana and not somebody who will stand up for Obama.
And Steve, we have to go to our closing statements, okay. And you have the first. Didn't want you to use up all your good information there. Right. So you've got 2 minutes.
All right. Thanks, Jay. And thank you for attending here tonight. I want to thank the moderators. And I want to thank the people of Montana for giving me the privilege of serving as your congressman for the past 2 years. I love our state. It's an honor to serve as a lone congressman for the state of Montana. But you know, my background's a little different than most who serve back in Congress. I saw my mom and dad start up a home construction business. I went to Montana State University, got a degree in engineering, and then worked for 28 years creating good, high-paying jobs. Perhaps it's that engineering background that allows me to take a look at a problem and then find a solution. And that is why GovTrack, in my first year in Congress, ranked me as the number one most effective member of Congress, the first term members of 75, 40 Democrats, 35 Republicans. We were ranked number one. And why is that? Because we actually moved legislation through and got things passed. Now, we were very well received across the state in our positive message of more jobs, more high-paying jobs, and less government, a government that's more efficient and more effective and accountable to the people of Montana. You know, we need DC to look more like Montana. We don't want Montana to look more like Washington, DC. Several months ago, I was at the Yellowstone County Fair. I ran into a cowboy from eastern Montana. He had leather hands. He was over 90 years old. He had a hunched back, wearing his cowboy hat. And he said, Steve, he said, I fought in World War II in Europe. I fought for my country, but I grew up in eastern Montana, and I'm glad to have been in Montana virtually all my life. And he grabbed my hand with tears in his eyes. He said, I've never been so afraid for my country in my life. We need a new direction in Washington, a new United States Senate, a new president. And I will stand with the people of Montana. I will not stand with President Obama. And I would thank you for coming tonight. I would kindly ask for your support on November 4th.
Amanda Curtis, you have the next 2 minutes. We'll give you all the chance to applaud at the very end. Amanda, your time.
I've agreed to take this nomination for several reasons, one being that I wouldn't have to run a negative personal campaign. My opponent has a voting record that cannot be ignored. His voting record clearly shows how out of touch he is with Montanans' needs. Voters in Montana deserve to be as fully informed as they can when they go to cast their ballots, and one debate 2 weeks after ballots drop is not what we asked for. It's certainly a lot less than Montana voters deserve. But it's a start. And I think after tonight, everyone can see that there is a crystal clear choice for Montanans on November 4th between Congressman Daines, the most extreme congressman Montana has ever had, or myself, a woman who truly is one of us, who understands our struggles, working month to month without ever getting ahead, because DC policies tilt the playing field against us at every turn. I will work with anyone who is willing to come up with solutions that help all sectors of the economy, not just the biggest corporations and the wealthiest individuals. I'll support Montana-made solutions to accessing our public lands and science-based management of our forests and our wildlife. I'll protect and preserve programs like Medicare and Social Security and the Montana Aging Services, programs that keep Montanans in their homes and in their communities. As Montana's first female senator, I'll vote for equal pay for equal work and raising the minimum wage, because we all know that the best way to stimulate the economy is to empower the middle class and working families. Thanks very much for having me.
And there you have it. Congressman Daines, Amanda, nice job. Thank you very much. And thank you for joining us tonight here on the Montana Television Network, along with our friends in Yellowstone Public Radio and the Montana News Network. We'll see you on election night.
MTN, the Montana Television Network.